Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
What's up? I'm Pete.
And after last week's Stack was so successful with 49 titles, we are kicking it up to 86 titles this week.
Nope.
We're talking about every comic that came out, and several that did not, that we're just going to make up off of the top of our heads. So there you go.
That's right. We're covering comic strips in the newspaper, local comics, a.k.a. comedians, who we think are crushing it out there.
All right. Well,
and we're covering our comics.
Let's kick it off with Hagar the Horrible, 1,000,080. No, I'm kidding. Let's jump into the comics. This is shorter than last week, but still lots of stuff to talk about and some big titles. Even though this is what's called a fifth week, an extra week in comics, there's still some big stuff coming out. Kicking it off with Ultimate Universe, number one from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Stefano Caselli. The way this is working is we had Ultimate Invasion, which was the maker, the evil Reed Richards, coming into the Ultimate Universe, taking it over, getting rid of all the superheroes. And then we had some big changes where the maker was taken out of commission for at least a couple of years. And now we have a couple of heroes. We got a young Tony Stark called Iron Lad, another variant of Reed Richards from this dimension, who is now the new Doctor Doom.
And he's shy.
He's shy. Something's happened to his face, I would assume, courtesy of the maker. And in this issue, they're trying to recruit other heroes to fight back. Specifically, what we find out here, and this is a bit of a spoiler for the issue and for the new status quo of the Ultimate Universe, the maker kept all of these relics and different things that created the Marvel heroes. He kept them out of the way in Latveria. And ultimately, what they're trying to do is get them back and get these heroes back and get the world back the way it is. So what this issue is aiming to do is set the tone, set the stage for the overall plot of the upcoming rebooted Ultimate Universe. We're going to be kicking into it proper in January with the new Ultimate Spider-Man title, followed by a Black Panther title. And in the back of this book, we get a preview of what I'm most excited about, just because it's such a wild take. Peach Momoko doing X-Men, but not Demon Days X-Men. This is Ultimate Universe X-Men in the classic Peach Momoko style. So there you go.
Yay.
Pretty cool. And Justin, focus on armor.
Yes. Well, before we get to the backup story, though, Justin, I know you and I think we liked Ultimate Invasion, but ultimately you're like, okay, what's the point of this? What are we getting to?
Yeah.
So stop saying what point
you say you were like, we're talking about the Ultimate Universe. Ultimately, I feel like, yeah, I'm just saying
ultimately,
you know,
in a universal way. I don't know. I have a limited amount of vocabulary. Is that the word? I just learned
wow.
that.
Is that a word?
That was on my calendar today. Nice. Justin, what did you think about this book?
What a boring vocabulary calendar. Vocabulary is one of the words.
Tomorrow you can't word. Do that. I'm excited to find out what that means.
They ran out of ideas. Ultimately, this look at the Ultimate Universe is sort of it still is unclear exactly what we're doing here. We get the ultimate versions of the characters. It seems like the Thor especially reminded me of the back in the day Ultimate Thor. He gets an ultimate sword through his ultimate heart and seems to be totally fine with it, which I was like, sick. Pretty cool. But it feels like maybe we're doing like a mashup. This is a guess, speculation, but and a little bit of a spoiler. Thor gets a sword through the heart, and then they at the same time capture all these relics from Latveria. And it looks like they're pulling out a spider that they're going to maybe cure Thor from his sword wound with, a spider that perhaps maybe is juiced up with some radiation. So maybe Thor is the ultimate Spider-Man.
Well, he's not. I mean, this is not a spoiler. They've put it out there. Peter Parker is going to be Spider-Man. The concept of the new Ultimate Spider-Man is that he was already an adult. He's already married to Mary Jane. He already has two kids. And that's when he becomes Spider-Man. So something will happen off of that. I think the big thing that I was surprised about with this issue is I expected it to be more of a universe-wide, here's what's going on leading into these three titles that we all already know about, maybe some more titles beyond that. But instead, this feels like the first issue of Ultimate Avengers more than anything. So I'm not quite sure what happened there. I mean, maybe that's the goal. And Jonathan Hickman is a meticulous planner, so I'm sure we will see this pay off somewhere down the road. But I was surprised that, to your point, we didn't get Spider-Man in this. We got a tease of Black Panther. We saw some pages from X-Men. But this didn't feel like the universe thing so much as very focused on Tony Stark. Go ahead.
Well, my point is that, like, it feels like there's no grand gesture. It doesn't feel like we're getting pointed in different directions. It feels like it's like, yeah, you get it. We got these characters back again. You're going to see a Spider-Man. It's a little different. There were just slight changes to all of them, which the word ultimate is not, if you could check your word a day, I don't think it means we made some slight changes. Not there yet. We made some slight changes to these things. So, but it's Jonathan Hickman whose thing is grand scale ideas. So I don't know. I guess it feels like we're being paced into it, and I'm just surprised it's not more of a swing here.
I agree with you on that. To be positive about it, this is a good comic. Stefano Caselli's art is really good. He's got the beefiest Thor I think I've ever seen in my life, so that was nice to see.
And do you like your Thor's beefy?
I do like your Thor with extra beef.
Mm-hmm. That's when I go into a Thor movie, I'm like, extra beef, please. And I am satisfied every single time. To the point that you're saying, this feels more like, hey, here's an alternate universe tale. And I like the concept of we've got this relic and the mission and the propulsion of we need to restore the universe to the way it is. That seems like a nice concept to me. But what I agree with you on is the ultimate universe felt like this breath of fresh air when it came out. It felt like it was in
your
face.
You're talking about the first time.
The first time. I'm saying all the stuff that came out of there, it felt like, oh, this is different than the Marvel Universe. Like, we're getting some tweaks here. This feels fresh. This feels new. This feels modern. It is unencumbered with continuity. This is encumbered with continuity. I'm not up to that on my word of day calendar yet, but I assume that's a word probably.
It's like it's a vegetable for salads.
Right. This is where the original Ultimate Universe was like, new comic readers come in. This is, you got to know everything, guys. You got to know exactly what this all of these relics are. You got to know this isn't Dr. Doom. This is a Reed Richards Dr. Doom, and that's why they're commenting he's skinny. You have to know who Sif is and Thor and what the regular continuity is. And mind you, I do know all of that. still enjoy it.
So why are you mad, bro? Well, but maybe that's the point.
It seems like too much.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe as the main Marvel universe is becoming more like open to new readers and MCU friendly, the Ultimate Universe is the one where you're going to do more of the deep continuity stuff. Like, for instance, having a Spider-Man who's married to a woman who some think is his true love, and maybe they would be happy that he's married to her.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe it's the sort of thing where they're like, ultimate means like very select. So they're like, how can we get the fewest readers possible? How can we drive away the widest range of people possible and really focus on our aging comic book fan base? That's what we got to do here. That's something that comics needs. I'm being sarcastic. I don't actually think that, but
I would also say that you're going to get new readers in an Ultimate Universe. They sort of just did a little bit of a little switcheroo where new readers are like, "Ooh, Ultimate Universe 1. Let me get on with these Marvel characters. Yeah. What does all this mean?" But then you're going to get all the readers that want these old ideas back together, back in a main book. And then maybe new readers are going to go back and read old comics. So it might just be like a necessary flip-flop, they think, to serve a fan base that hasn't been fed in a while. Pete, are you excited to see a Peter Parker, Mary Jane marriage?
Yeah, that very specific part. It just seems like a while ago, DC was, I felt like, not new reader friendly because everything you opened had so much continuity, so much going on, you felt lost. And it feels like that's what Marvel is doing right here, which doesn't make any sense to me.
All right, fair enough. And by the way, just to be clear, again, if you are a comic book fan, I think this is a really well-made comic that I generally enjoy. Yeah. I am excited to see all these Ultimate Universe titles. But just thinking about the greater implications, like Pete is saying, I don't know if this is going to bring people into comics the same way that the Ultimate Comics did. I don't think it's necessarily going to set up like, here's the reboot of the MCU in 10 years that we want. And I don't think that's what Hickman is going for. He wants to write a story that is interesting for him.
It's a different intention. And that to me is what I think our expectations going in was like, okay, Ultimate Universe 1, let's kick off this thing that we know is a reboot. And instead it's not that. So that's, I think, why we're being maybe more critical. But to your point earlier, like, I enjoy reading this and I will continue to read this.
Yes, exactly. We're very critical and we love it. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom special number one from DC Comics, written by Tim Seeley, Joey Esposito, Ethan Sachs, art by Miguel Mendoza, Ray Anthony Height, and Scott Eaton. This is telling three stories of the main characters in Aquaman, providing a little bit of a bridge between the first Aquaman movie and the second one that ostensibly is still coming out in a couple of months, as far as we know. So the front story is all about Aquaman itself, teaming up a little bit with Wonder Woman and The Flash, Batman nowhere to be seen, Batman declared missing. The second story is all about Black Manta, and the third story is about Orm, aka Ocean Master. Pete, I want to hear from you on this. You're the big Aqua fan on the podcast, so take it away.
Yeah, this is a great collection of stories. Love the Tim Seeley first story. Love the Black Manta story. And then the rattling of the cage. Last story was super cool. I think this is a great package here. And I appreciate the fact that we're trying to build a bridge from, the Aquaman movies into the comics a little bit here. You know what I mean? Like, which Aquaman is actually Aquaman type of thing. So, yeah, I'm all for this. I thought this was great. Art was fantastic.
My big issue with this is it didn't pay homage to the five naps I took during the first Aquaman movie. Like, I feel like those are the gaps I need filled in. You know what I mean?
Because mm-hmm. I thought it was interesting that Pete said a bridge, because a bridge is over water and Aquaman lives both on water and out of water. So I thought that was really odd, Pete.
That makes sense.
I did not like the first Aquaman movie, but I thought if you are a fan of the Aquaman movie, this is a good thing to pick up. The reason I say that is I think all three writer artist teams did a very good job of channeling the characters from the first movie. The first story in particular from Tim Seeley, I thought I could hear Jason Momoa's narration dialogue in my head the entire time.
With so that flowing really underwater hair. I mean, come on.
And it's a fun Tim Seeley story and it's a fun Aquaman story. I don't know if it specifically felt like, this is a DCEU thing so much as, hey, what can we do in comics that maybe we can't necessarily do on screen? Which, great, go for it.
Yeah.
The Black Manta story by Joey Esposito, I thought, was very moody and intense. Really like the art in that one. It was very dark and felt almost a little, not as exaggerated, but a little like Jay Lee in terms of the shading and everything.
Oh, yeah, good call.
And the Orm Ocean Master, I don't know. I thought that was fine.
It has a little bit of an old school art feel to it.
I would say across the board, the art was really good in this, especially in the first one. The Miguel Mendoza like art really channeled the movie in a way that I was like, oh, wow, you don't usually see that where using actual reference really works in comic book form. So I would
that was definitely that. Nicole Kidman in that story, 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Amber Heard, maybe not quite as much, but there you go. Well, I mean, anyway, if you're a fan of the movies, pick that one up. Next up, Stranger Things, The Voyage, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Michael Morrissey, art by Todor Kristoff. We have been a little back and forth about some of the Stranger Things comics from Dark Horse, but this is from the same team as Stranger Things Kamchatka, which I don't want to speak for anybody else, but that was certainly my favorite Stranger Things miniseries that has come out, and maybe one of the better non-TV show Stranger Things that have come out, set in Russia, showing what went horribly wrong there, giving a spy story that sort of goes around the Stranger Things world. And this story, I really dug this first issue as well. This is like straight up, whatever reference you want to use, it's Alien, it's the last voyage of the Demeter, it's all of that, but with Stranger Things stuff. And I thought it had the same amount of tension and horrible, horrific violence that you expect from that sort of thing. Just a bunch of people trapped on a boat with a Demogorgon. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I feel agree. Like by the time Stranger Things actually comes out, Netflix comics line would be like, okay, in this issue, the Demogorgon's just like crossing the street to go, okay, what else can we do here? Can we get more? The Demogorgon here is taking a short nap, and this book follows the nap. and the people who
stop
are
pushing.
Well, hold on, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying, but I actually think the youngest one on the
fucking team here.
Yeah, but I think these are actually taking the story and not being like, what story can we tell about these kids that has nothing to do with supernatural stuff because otherwise they don't interact with it, but instead being like, all right, that Russia stuff was interesting. Let's expand on that as much as humanly possible.
And I agree that, I feel like they've just carved that out. And again, like, I liked this. If you're a fan of Aliens, this is very much that I felt. And in the Aliens books, even in art style, I feel like there's some connections there. It's just funny to me how much Russia stuff we're following from a Stranger Things universe POV when that is such a side thing. I'd actually like to see a Demogorgon story set somewhere completely different. Demogorgon.
It's actually demo. It wrong. Demo.
First off, I think that this is, you know, regardless of the Stranger Things and the Russia and all the different tie-in stuff, I think it's a great comic because the art's awesome. It's super suspenseful. And it kind of is this, I got so into the story, I forgot about Stranger Things for a while. And then I saw the Demogorgon. I was like, oh, that's right. This is supposed to be tying into Stranger Things. So I feel like it does do a good job of kind of being like, hey, this is similar, but a little different. So it's kind of fresh and enjoyable. And you're not kind of like, all right, where's 11? Where's going to be the waffle reference? What are we doing? I felt like they did a great job of pulling you in with this amazing art style and all this tension and stuff, and then kind of telling us a story that has the Demogorgon in it.
Lego my demo. Yeah.
If you can correctly identify how many ways we pronounce the main monster in Stranger Things, you're going to win a prize. I don't want to say what it is, but why don't we move on and talk about an advanced book, The Holy Roller, #1. This is on sale November 22nd from Image Comics. It's written by Andy Samberg and Rick Remender, art by Joe Troman. This is about a kid who grew up being the son of a semi-famous bowler, coming back to town.
A regionally famous bowler.
Doing a classic walking tall, I think is the reference that I want to look for, kind of.
Mm.
The movie they remade with The Rock. You know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yeah. I do know what you're talking about.
Everybody does. Uh-huh. Well, we're talking about a couple Walking Tall spin-off comics, I think, later in the stack.
Absolutely. Right? There's one that follows on the events in Russia, and the other one does not.
Oh, yes. I love
Anyway, we have a lot of expectations here. We love Rick Remender. I think also generally people like that Andy Samberg guy, but there's certainly an expectation of humor and other things going on there. How do you think they paid it off with this book or not?
I think it delivers. I really think that there's some real fun comedy bits here. Also, the kind of holy roller dad type looks like Judd Hirsch from Taxi, so that's adorable.
Yeah.
I think there's like a lot of fun things about this book. And, you know, sometimes you think you're visiting a town and then next thing you know, you're murdering somebody with a bowling ball. I think it's a fun idea. You know what I mean? Like
That's an unrelated comment from you.
Yeah, right? Yeah, just unrelated because halfway through the sentence, I realized we're not allowed to spoil anything. But I think it's a very great team. It's an all-star team working on this book. Art's fantastic. The story is hilarious. This is going to be a big comic.
It's a great mix of Andy Samberg and Rick Remender. There's a lot of comedy here, but at the same time, I was like, I got to the back half of the book, and I was like, ah, there's that Rick Remender flavor that I've been waiting for. So really enjoyed this. The fun art as well. I do think surprising turns, I guess I would say, and the Judd Hirsch of it all made me feel like, oh, this is a movie script.
100%. I mean, just to say the negative part first, I always kind of take exception to things that feel like, oh, you wanted to pitch this as a movie and now you're just doing it as a comic book. And I certainly don't expect that from Rick Remender. I think of Rick thinking comic books first. And mind you, art's great from Joe Troman. There's some great ultraviolence that happens, as you were mentioning, both a little bit in the first half, but mostly in the second half of the book. So you get that Rick Remender flavor there. Certainly, if you are an Andy Samberg fan, it's packed to the gills with humor, and there's jokes and some very silly offhand stuff in the classic Lonely Island style that, like, we're just going to throw a joke in here that doesn't connect to this character or anything. Just it's going to be goofy and weird. And I enjoyed that because I enjoy their humor. But it's frustrating to me to read this and to be like, this is the first part of a 6-part movie script. I want to see how this is a comic and how this works as a comic. I don't necessarily need to see Jewish walking tall with bowling balls instead of a big baseball bat, you know? So hopefully this establishes itself more as a comic in the second issue, because right now it felt like the beginnings of a screenplay to me. But
walking ball.
We go. That's where it started. I bet that's where it started. I did appreciate the focus on Jewish characters, though. That was nice to see just in terms of representation. And it felt very authentic to me, which you could always like smell it not being authentic a mile away. So good job on that. Let's move on. Talk about The Space Between. Number one from Boom Studios, written by Corinna Becco, art by Denny Lockhart. It was a new title, a new sci-fi title that is your classic, like, Titanic type thing. You got an upstairs, downstairs situation.
Oh, man. You know, the pilots and the maintenance people. You know?
Will they ever get together? I don't know. Pete, the answer is basically a romance book. How did you feel about it?
I love the rom-com of it all. You know, the classic tale of two people from different walks of life, and they meet in a magical moment. Yeah, I mean, they got a little smoocheroo in there, super happy about that. And then they were torn away from each other. Will they ever get back together? Gosh, I hope so. I'm really pulling for this ship. And yeah, that being said, this is really solid art, fun, even though we've seen this a story told in many different ways. It's still is fun to root for.
Yeah, I like the way this world was built. It really is an upstairs, downstairs in that everyone's like, oh, what happens down there? We don't do that. Or what happens up there? But there are tubes connecting each of them. They're like, go through the tube and you'll find out. The only thing is, this is an ongoing series.
Right.
And it has a to be continued at the end. But I was like, the story is over. You just completed the story, I feel
it's
like.
Here. Over. So
I was very surprised.
Can we talk about the ending for a second? I just want to interrupt. So spoiler warning on Pete, they get back together at the end. They're like, well, we're very happy here. We're together. We've really changed society. So to Justin's point, I was very confused about what happens next. Potentially something very interesting. Once you've gotten past this.
Yeah.
Tropey, you know, enjoyably tropey, but tropey romance thing of how can a lower class person and a higher class person ever get together? They're really going to teach each other about each other's worlds. It speed runs through that in the first issue. So what happens after that? I don't know. I'm curious to find out. It feels like between the writing and Danny Luckert's art, a little bit like Luda Brothers Light, kind of. Like it's not exactly the same thing, but it has a little bit of a sense of that.
Let's hope it's less pervy.
It seems to be. Yeah, so far. If that pushes it forward and really explores, like, now that you've gotten this, how do you deal with society now that it's integrated in the space station? I don't know. That's interesting to me, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, we get, like, a little fast forward, but we don't get to see what happens in between. You know what I mean? We do get
the space between.
The space between, yeah.
Yeah. That's what they're doing.
The art actually reminded me a little bit of Tony Harris on Ex Machina. In a way, okay. as well as a little bit of the design and whatnot. There is a line, the very last panel is very much like, goodbye, this story's over. But the panel before has a couple lines, but love doesn't really change the world, right? There's bound to be a backlash. Mm-hmm. So I do think this is more of a wide canvas, like year-spanning story, and maybe we're going to see this sort of generational impacts of it. But I was just surprised we didn't get a little bit more of a nod to that before.
But come on, guys, a pilot and a maintenance person getting together? I mean, come on.
Oh, have you flown Delta? The pilots and the maintenance people are making out all day. It's all rom-com. That's a sexy airline, guys.
Oh, man.
Spider-Boy, number one from Marvel, written by Dan Slott, art by Paco Medina and Ty Templeton. This is the kickoff of the new series for Spider-Man's sidekick, who has recently been created in the real world but reintegrated into continuity in the fake world of the Marvel Universe. We're following his solo adventures here as we find out a lot more about him, and he battles some folks from his past over two adventures. This is exactly the sort of goofy fun I think you'd expect from Dan Slott, full of puns and jokes and Squirrel Girl cameos and balloonatics and things like that. So I had a good time, and overall, I was pretty happy that this is also a comic book that I think you could hand to kids as well, getting the opposite of Ultimate Universe, which is a deep continuity thing. This is a very light continuity thing, as usual, and it really gets Dan Slott back to his all-ages roots, which I was very happy about.
Yeah, I agree. This is Dan Slott just having a lot of fun, and it jumps off the page. And I think when Dan Slott's having fun, we are having fun, and it's silly and great. And yeah, I mean, I'm not really sold on Spider-Boy, but it's a fun comic, and he's having a great time. You know what I mean?
You don't like which part, the spider or the boy?
The boy part. I don't like it when he's got his thing off. You know what I mean? His mask off. He looks weird.
His teeth? You're talking about the issue he complains about? You don't like his teeth?
He just wishes all boys would wear masks. He doesn't like looking at their faces. Like,
that's true.
Gross little faces.
Take your mask off when you're a man. I mean, boys are gross. No doubt about that. I mean, I agree with you. This is fun. And it's just the way that Dan Slott has been talking about this book is like, huge revelation, huge surprise. You'll never guess the origin of this character. And then the reveal eventually was like, he was created by a woman named Madame Monstrosity, and that's it.
Well, how would you have guessed that, though?
Yeah, well, that was the Edge of Spider-Verse story, I believe, they revealed that, but then they sort of reiterate it in this issue. But yeah, it's not... he's definitely been pumping this up as world taking wild swings, and spoiler here, but one of his wild swings is that Bailey Briggs makes a joke of what do you take when you mix an elephant and a rhino, elephino, and then his friend gets turned into an elephino. Very funny, but also, I don't know.
That feels very Dan Slott to me, where it's like, it's a joke, but there's a deep emotional underpinning to it. And then he also plays the joke when the fight happens. Yeah. So like that part I get, I guess it just feels like I was sold this character as like a, and we had all this speculation like, oh, it's the spider. And when it bit Peter Parker, it took on human qualities and that's Spider-Boy. And we had all these big ideas. And then it's like, no, a random woman with her like other animal boys did it. And I was like, okay, so like almost like the ultimate book we talked about earlier, where it's like the expectations were a certain place, and now we're landing in the reality of the story, and just it hits a little different. But like to your point from before, this does feel like a great all ages story that I could see lighting up the young comic fan, the masked boy that we all have in our lives.
Batman, Catwoman, the Gotham War, Scorched Earth, number one from DC Comics, written by Chip Zdarsky and Tini Howard. Art by Mike Hawthorne and Nicola Szymyszka. Sorry about that, Nicola. Anyway, this is the final issue of the Gotham War. We've been following the storyline as Catwoman builds up an army of thieves to try to provide for themselves. Batman really didn't like that and reacted by fighting his entire family and brainwashing essentially Jason Todd so that whenever he gets a rush of adrenaline, he starts to feel fear. Meanwhile, in the background, Vandal Savage has been recruiting Catwoman's army secretly in order to bring a bunch of different pieces of a meteor rock, the one that gave him his longevity, to bring a larger meteor to Earth that will destroy Gotham City. Instead, we get some big changes and twists by the end here. How'd you guys feel about the end of this event? Pete, you got some Bat-Cat stuff and they got it ripped away from you. How'd you feel?
This was a lot. This was a lot to all have in one issue. It kind of felt like the Gotham War kind of got thrown out the window because of all the madness that kind of got ramped up here. So it was a little bit like, oh, you having fun with who's on whose side? Well, that's all doesn't matter now because of this giant meteor and all this. I just felt like it kind of took a swerve and then got into the vent, which I was a little kind of bummed about, I guess. But overall, this was a huge issue. So much went down. People were dying left and right. I mean, this was a crazy issue, jam-packed issue. And overall, I think this was a really cool, fun event. I'm not that, you know, spoilers, not that big a fan of Jason Todd. So, you know, the fact that he died here was pretty cool.
Oh, he didn't die.
Also, Catwoman died, so that
right.
That
also she also happened. Didn't die.
No, I'm pretty sure they both died.
They didn't, though.
Yeah, Batman, yeah. Batman, the greatest detective of all, certainly thinks like they're all dead. So I don't know.
No. Jason Todd, just to be clear, like, so there is the moment where Jason Todd does the Dark Knight Rises thing, where he takes the
sacrifices himself
into the meteor, and I was like, wow, they killed Jason Todd, and nobody had to vote for it this time. That's nice. And instead, there's the panel of him parachuting out of the plane, and he looks down and goes, holy shit, or something like that. It's bleeped. He doesn't curse in the comic book. And then while Batman is looking down at, there's a lot of spoilers I'm throwing out here, but as he's looking down at the new Lazarus pit that's been created in Gotham City, Jason Todd comes over and puts his hand on his shoulder. So Jason Todd very much alive. At the end of the issue, Batman thought the Catwoman was lost in this Lazarus pit. Something else has happened to her. She's in shadow, but he still has a sense that she's alive and she's shadowed in the background there. I could tell you what's going to happen.
That's just a shadow Catwoman. That's not really Catwoman.
Oh, yeah. It's like
it's a bunch of cats standing in the shape of Catwoman, you know.
Classic. Yeah. It's a Catwoman. It's not the Catwoman.
Exactly.
It's a cat, lowercase c cat. Of cats. Lowercase w. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes.
But in general, I just think this event was a little messy. It's like the Batman take is inconsistent. Like he got rid of Jason Todd's memories, or he made him into – he didn't get rid of his memories. He made him into this person whose adrenaline makes him incapable of being a hero. And then that's just sort of yada yada a bunch of times in this final issue where it's just like, yeah, but we can't deal with that right now. I was like, can't deal with that.
Deal with that. You guys got to deal with that. I agree with you. I think they had this idea my negative way of looking at it would be they couldn't figure out how to end this philosophical argument between Catwoman and Batman in any sort of ongoing way. So through the swerve there in terms of the Vandal Savage thing, that ultimately takes the decision out of their hands, which I get. The positive way of looking at it was like they got enamored with the idea of they're in the middle of this philosophical debate, take their eye off the ball, which is the villains of Gotham City, Vandal Savage, all of these other things, and ultimately both lose essentially because of that. Batman loses a chunk of Gotham City. Catwoman loses something. We don't exactly
know.
Yeah, herself. Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Well, but I agree with you. It was a little – as nonsensical as some of those arguments were, I wanted to see them focus on that, on the Batman and Catwoman of it all, and to pull that rug out from under – I don't know. It was a choice.
It just seems like after this, they're still going to have to go back to that debate. You know what I mean? Where it's like once Cat, comes back alive, or the cats get together and sacrifice to the Lazarus pit or something, however it happens, we're still going to have to come back to this debate because Gotham's still going to be needed defending, and whose side are people going to be on?
Well, and also like what there's this meteor that had an effect that no one understood. Like, we don't know what happened to their bodies when Catwoman, when she fell into it. So like, and Vandal Savage is up in the air here. So like, I don't know, like there is fallout from this, but are we picking that up? There's a little epilogue at the end of this issue that feels like, nope, we're moving right on to something completely different. So I don't know what the repercussions are. Yeah.
Yeah. Savage Red Sonja, number one from Dynamite, written by Dan Panosian, art by Alessio Patillo. This is your classic Red Sonja, She-Devil with the sword, going on an adventure, killing some stuff, fighting some stuff. Pete, over to you.
Yeah, this was great. The Savage title usually means it's going to be a lot of over-the-top fun, which this was. This was a ton of action, fighting monsters, bloods and guts, great art. It wasn't overly TNA, so I appreciated that. It was, still a part of the character, and that's cool. But I felt like they didn't lean into it, which I appreciated.
Well, but I think we had a little Red Sonja crush here, maybe. Like, there's a lot of talk about how she can't ever be with anyone unless they are, like, as good at being a fighter as her.
Yeah, that's
and
a classic.
This guy, Lucian, he bests the Sand Monster. Maybe
I'm
this
right
is
with
a
this.
Little
I
bit of a
writing,
connection.
If you're looking for a classic Red Sonja adventure, that's what this provides. The art is good. I want a little something more out of it. Like, I've read enough of these at this point, but this is a solid example of this type of book.
How about some romance, Alex?
Yeah,
because
Alex.
This did feel a little bit different for me from the other Red Sonja stuff. And I definitely enjoyed this more than a lot of the classic, just like, how many meat places can I stick this sword before the end of the issue?
Meat places? Meat places. To meet human beings, body. I got to give you my word a day calendar.
Yeah.
Human beings was last month.
It's crazy.
That opened my eyes because I used to call them meat places as well.
My calendar has meat places on it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But mine's designed to make me less smart. It's trying to take away my vocabulary.
Negative word a day calendar.
You're killing it. You're killing
it. Deletes a word.
That's called beer. That's called beer, Justin. Yeah.
Sacrificers, I'm doing that too.
Sacrificers number four from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender. Again, art by Axe Femura. In this world, there are a bunch of kids who are regularly taken and juiced for the gods.
That's juiced? The best
They're juiced.
Yeah,
they
you
are.
Gotta get juiced.
They're made happy.
Cheers.
And then the gods drink their juice. And as we find out, this issue that keeps the gods young and healthy. What I was most surprised about with this issue, and I know I'm Charlie Brown with the football here, but reading a Rick Remender book, but this book, last issue was so devastating. This issue, I was like, okay, there's hope they're going to right the ship. And I should know better by this point, but I do not.
Yeah, you should. First off, just, you know, I didn't like how you, you know, said again after Rick Remender. Rick Remender can write as many books as he wants because he kills it. This is an amazing comic. So happy Remender's working on this. The art, the characterization is just unbelievable. I mean, this is super tight banana stuff we're talking about here. I love the panel. The panels, they're just insane. I just can't say enough great things about, yes, you're going to have your heart ripped out of your chest, but you're going to enjoy the ride so much you really won't care.
Wow. Put that on the back cover. I agree. This is really good. I mean, Rick Remender, just great emotionally driven storytelling top to bottom.
Yes.
In this issue, we get some a little bit more backstory on the family of this from one of the sacrificers. We get a little bit of the high court stuff that I think is going to play into the story. So the elements are starting to come together in a story that's been driven by a lot of the roller coaster that Alex was mentioning. So very much excited. Rick Remender, I feel like, is just so good at getting all his pieces right where he wants them.
Plus, you know, flying magic carpet. I mean, come on, Zals. I mean, what's not to like?
No, I like it. I'm saying that Rick Remender keeps tricking me into thinking like, hey, there's hope in this world. I think the heroes are going to win and things are going to get better every time. Every single time he gets me. Like a Latter-day Lucy. I did want to give a shout out to Max Femura. In particular, there's a sequence where the gods are getting younger over the course of a series of battles. That's not easy to do, draw the same character at different ages. So that was very neat in particular. White Widow, number one from Marvel, written by Sarah Galley, art by Alessandro Miracolo. We're getting a new tale of Yelena Belova here, where she moves to a small town, just trying to have a regular life. But of course, she's the White Widow, so that's not going to happen. This very purposefully, and I think Sarah Galley calls this out a little bit in the script, has shades of an extension of the classic Hawkeye series. Seems like the same sort of thing with Yelena moving to an apartment building. But of course, there's a couple of messed up and weird elements there. This also very clearly channels the voice of Florence Pugh as Yelena, I would say.
Pew.
To a T. There's shout outs to the Yelena Kate Bishop friendship from the Hawkeye series. So if you're a fan of that, if you want more of that and you've been waiting to see it on screen, this is a good book to pick up.
What a nice day for a White Widow, I say, because this is a pretty good book.
Great. Nailed it. I did really the way that they took the idea of the Hawkeye identification boxes and blew them out into like sort of like dossier style things, like short little dossiers about it. There's also a sequence that I thought was very fun where White Widow has a bunch of pros and cons as she's trying to figure out her personality and writing them on the wall. That was just very enjoyable to parse through and look through all the things she had written down because there's a lot of fun Easter eggs there.
Love, like, neutral, dislike, and hate. Just really great rubric.
I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
That's the thing about
this comic. What we're doing right now. We're doing that about comics.
Yes, but I'm going to do that about myself as well and really figure out myself.
We should do – you should be in the stack.
We should review 40 people.
Hate.
Detective Comics 1076 from DC Comics, written by Ram V and Dan Waters, art by Jason Sean Alexander, Christopher Mitten, Liam Sharp, and Aditya Bidikar. We're getting a bunch of different stories in the world of Batman here, magazine style, same as over in Action Comics. But the main story here is Batman has been taken over. Demon is going to be hanged at dawn.
Yeah.
For real. That's what's going on. Yoinks. I think, oh my God, I think this was Derek Mainhart called this out on our Patreon Slack, is really liking this book. And he said that he felt they're doing the same things that Chip Zdarsky has been doing in Batman, but better here. What do you think about that, Steve?
Okay. Well, first off, badass cover. I just think this is a great, great story here. I love the art. I love the Cat team up with Ivy here. And love Cat talking with Jim. That was really fun. Love the Bane story that we got later. I love the Question story we got. This was just a great kind of check-in with different people in the kind of the Gotham world and what they're up to. I loved it. And the art is fantastic. This is good stuff.
Azrael story, is that the one you're talking about?
Yep.
I agree. I thought this book, and to answer Derek's statement, like, it's much more, it feels like the Chip stuff is doing a lot of continuity things and doing a lot of like plot business. And that maybe is slowing it down from a just a pure storytelling perspective. When this book feels like it just gets to be moody, it gets to sort of take its time. All these stories are really that way. And from an art perspective, I think that's really great. I literally love the Question story and the Azrael story. Both great characters that we don't see enough of on their own. And then this idea that Batman's being taken over by a demon, but even more interestingly, like that Gotham City is being split, feels like such a useful idea for to take forward into the rest of the series, as if nobody realizes, but demons are literally taking over the street level of Gotham City. And that's something that Batman is dealing with a little bit, but also he's encountered that. Almost, it could be a metaphor for like a virus or something that I think is,
or just the divide in a city, honestly, because I think that's what they're going for. It's giving it a noir vibe, both in terms of the art and the pacing. And then beyond that, it's about how it's like this very 70s streets on fire type deal where the city's about to explode. Good stuff. Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the Scorpius Run, number 3 from IDW, written by Mike Johnson and Ryan Parrott, art by Angel Hernandez. The crew of the Enterprise is on a death race through space, and there's lots of twists and turns here as various other crews they're up against betray them, and not too much of a surprise there, but I continue to love this
series.
You
love this.
I do. Well, the action is really big.
Mike Johnson, that's what it's about.
Sure. I think I do like Ryan Parrott, who writes... oh my God, Flame Guy from Massive Verse.
That's it.
Rogue Sun.
That's the name of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like how you
I do love the Rogue Sun stuff. And I think like just this has a propulsiveness to it because of the race setting. It's fun. It's fast. It's exactly, it feels exactly how it should. I really like this book.
I like this issue better than the previous two. This one feels like we're in the action. They're able to toggle back and forth between the different ships and how it's going for everyone. This definitely feels a little bit less. I'm feeling the sort of the outer context laid on all these Star Trek characters a little less, and it's just they're in it doing it. So I definitely enjoyed that a little bit more than the previous two.
Yeah, I feel like this is great kind of Star Trek action here. Great art, enjoyable story. I specifically like the kind of like... I don't know, monster with the kind of like a little jaw with the teeth and the fangs.
The Kilowog, but for Star Trek?
Yes, thank you. That's exactly what I was talking about. I feel like it's a fun, if you like Star Trek, you're going to enjoy this, and they got some new cool characters.
Yeah.
What is a race but a trek, a fast trek?
There you go. Not up to that word yet. Doctor Strange, number 9 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Pascal Ferry. Doctor Strange is going up against General Strange, the multiple thousands of years older version of himself. They're mano a mano, and there's some twists and surprises by the end. Pete, you seem pretty excited. So why don't you kick it off?
I'm so happy because, like, first off, you know, I don't know about you guys, but it's really annoying when kids come up to you and they're like, hey, how are babies made? And you have nothing to tell them. So this comic tackles that.
Because you have no knowledge about that.
Yeah, you don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have kids.
Like, I don't know, you guys have kids. You tell me. You tell me, kid.
But, well,
Put your mask back on and you tell me.
I think Doctor Strange really handles this in an amazing way. You got to fight a giant monster and then you awake the baby in the monster and then you get a baby. So I think that's a great way to explain it. And this is just a tripped out, weird, hilarious, amazing comic that when you get a Doctor Strange, you're like, yeah, but how strange is it going to be? Oh, it's up there. But also it's worth it for the art alone. The battles in this, the different panels that are just kind of like beautiful where it's like the magic is almost like glass that they're breaking through in some panels. Mm-hmm. Like really unbelievable.
I just wanted to say, I think I agree with you, Pete. We should probably compliment ourselves a little more. Like if we gave a really good explanation, we'd be like, that was a really good explanation at the end of our explanation.
Wait, yeah. What?
In the middle of your explanation, you explained it. You're like, that was a really great way of explaining it.
That's not what I was saying, but okay.
I'm going to do that. Go on. Yeah.
But just so we're clear, Pete, Jed McKay's my guy. Okay. So you back off. Okay. I'm not stepping on your stuff. I love Jed McKay.
There's two comics in this stack that Jed McKay absolutely murdered. It was so great.
You don't have to tell me, guy. Get off my Jed.
Hey, I'm just in line behind you, bro. All right.
I also really enjoyed this. I think the setting up this big fight and then having it spin in a couple different directions. I like the reveal at the end of the last issue that our Doctor Strange is backing the other side in this epic millennial spanning war that our general has been fighting forever. Clea's doing such great work here. And the art's fantastic, and we leave it all with like a hopeful moment that gets turned into some just general weirdness, which I was like, keeping it strange.
Keep strange. I also think it's weird that he's a father now at the end of this issue, but also like the fact that they are just like in the middle of this giant fight, like, hey, don't hurt them. That's a child you're fighting. And it's like this weird moment where Doctor Strange and us, the reader, are like, wait, what? And it's a real needle scratch on a big kind of climactic fight when you're like, hey, you're beating the shit out of a little kid right now. And you got to be like, oh, no.
Well, why don't we move on to talk about another advanced issue, Bloodrick number one. This is on sale December 6th from Image Comics, written and drawn by Andrew Cranky. Pete, you must have loved this because the guy's name is Cranky and the main character is Cranky and you're Cranky. So first time you saw yourself on screen?
Oh, yeah. It's a comic. It's a comic, but thank you. Cranktastic. Yeah. What comic were we talking about?
Bloodrick, number one?
Oh, Bloodrick, yeah. Oh, my God. So Bloodrick was...
what a great explanation of that.
You just went from Cranky to Cranky to high voltage.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so I was like, okay, what's the deal? Is this guy just an insane hunter person? Because these small moments in this are really cool. Like the kind of like they have these kind of cool panels where it's just like this scrawling kind of space and he's this little hunter in this big world. So I was like, there's some deep ideas happening, but is this just like a juiced up hunter guy? I don't know. But I think as far as the first issue, it's pretty intense and kind of interesting. So I think the art's really fantastic.
I knew you would like this, Pete, even if you didn't know what you were talking about for the first half of that. Because when I read this, I was like, this is Usagi Yojimbo style art, focusing on a Conan the Barbarian type character, basically doing what the TV show Alone or any other survivalist show does on a episode by episode basis. So much of this issue is him being like, I'm hungry, but what do I do? And that's, we can all identify with that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I really like the format on this one. You know, converse to what I said about the Red Sonja book, the fact that this is all to people telling tales of Bloodrick, and they're like, no, let me tell you something crazy that Bloodrick did. And somebody else is like, no, I'll tell you an even crazier thing that Bloodrick did. It is very classic Conan style, like you're saying, but it really works here. The art and the look of Bludrick is a little exaggerated. It's not quite as exaggerated as Steve Scroce, but certainly like it starts to get there. Like it's a nod in that direction. And I really like giving it a snowy setting as well. It almost feels like it's one of those Black, White, and Blood books that Marvel puts out in that mode. So if you're looking for something like that, I thought this was a fun one to check out when it comes out in December. It's Love Jeff, it. The Jeffverse, number one from Marvel, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Guri Hyrou. This is another collection of the digital comic strip about everybody's favorite land shark and the little adventures he goes on. The first one, I believe, was a big hit and drew a bunch of kids back in comic book stores, the theme of this particular episode of The Stack. So I expect this one will do as well. I'll tell you what, I like this better than the first issue. I thought this was much funnier. The jokes were sharper, and I still continue to love everything that Kelly Thompson is doing here. The Guri Hyrou art is great. But this was a stronger issue than the first one, so I was very happy.
Yeah, I mean, this is also a first issue.
Wait, what?
It's also a first issue.
This was also a first issue, but the first one was It's Jeff, and this is It's Jeff, the Jeffverse.
Oh, okay. Cool, cool. I just want to make sure we're being clear about that. Sorry, go ahead, JT.
I mean, that's Marvel's fault. Marvel keeps releasing number ones of everything. It's terrible.
No shame. Why not? Every day I wake up, I'm like, Justin is number one.
New start.
It's Justin's number one day. This, I agree. This was better. You know, the art I thought was just fantastic. And I like incorporating more heroes into it than the first one, I feel like. And just, yeah, fun. Taking more, a wider range of places for Jeff to go, I think is fun. In general, just fun.
Yeah, this is a blast. It really jumps off the page. It's so much fun. It's all ages friendly, but even as an older person, I don't feel like, oh, this is for younger kids. I'm having a blast with this. I love how we helped out the aunt during the aunt story. Love the how, you know, he let MODOK play with the It's Jeff toy. It was really very sweet. I love the, you know, guard shark on duty at the dog park. I mean, the art is super tight bananas. This is adorable. These stories are a little bit longer, but the payoffs are better. And yeah, it's just, and I've loved every time Marvel has given us more Jeff, I have enjoyed every morsel of it. It's great.
Spirit World, number six from DC Comics, written by Alyssa Wong, art by Haining. In this issue, this is the last issue of this, where we're finding the final fate of the spirit world. There's some big changes and twists here. What'd you guys think about the wrap-up?
I thought this was awesome. I really thought, I love Spirit World. This was such a great issue, such a cool character. Love the conflict resolution we got here. Absolutely stunning, stunning, stunning art. Loved all the action. Just really kind of leaned into the art, letting the art lead the story. Just really cool panel designs and flow to it. I was super impressed. I also love the team. You got Constantine on here as well as others. So, yeah, I just had such a blast with this. It really felt like a breath of fresh air in the kind of DC world. So I loved it.
Yeah, I also like the way this came together. I was surprised by how the conflict was resolved in a way. And also, despite the fact that we had sort of randomly Batgirl and Constantine here, the story actually came together and focused on our main character in a way that I was like, oh, nice. I thought we were just going to get lost in a Constantine thing at the end, but came together in a nice way. And it was a nice just standalone six-issue series.
Great.
Let's move on to a book that I cannot believe this, but Pete kept texting me all week being like, put this in the stack. And I was like, I don't know if we have room. And he was like, put this in the stack. You have to put this in there. I have to talk about this book. So fine. Here you go, Pete. Red Light number one from AWA, written by Sarah H.
This is all you, man. This is all fucking you.
Art by...
I read this comic and I was just like, hey, Alex will think this is cool.
Art by Priscilla Patrates. I guess you'll find out what I think. I don't know. But I thought this was interesting to talk about because this is not a publisher we usually talk about. It's a new number one. I always think that's a good, interesting thing there to check out what they are doing and what kind of comics they're producing. So this is a book about an AI brothel that is populated by essentially highly advanced robots who are, one of them has a developing AI. We're focusing mostly on her and her interactions with some of her clientele, some of the people that work there, as well as the owner of the brothel himself. As you imagine, things can probably change by the end here. I think that was a pretty good explanation for me. Justin, yeah. What did you think about this book?
I really like this. I liked our main character here and the way that it gets into, like, it's set in to use another term from my calendar, a sex place. And it so it's set there. If you don't want to read about that, then I wouldn't pick this up. But if that's something you're interested in or fine with, like, I actually really liked the main character. The situation was interesting. I'm curious, the idea later that we find out she is the first AI to really develop empathy, I thought was an interesting direction to go in. And I like where the possibilities where this could go. Mm-hmm. And the art was great as well.
Yeah, I'd throw out there, you know, whatever Pete thinks, in all honesty, I'm always trepidatious about this sort of thing where I'm like, are you just trying to do this for the titillation value? And I don't think so. I think this is trying to actually explore the implications of AI and how we use AI, how we use each other, how we sexually use people, etc. And there's some interesting tones to the characters, particularly with the owner of the brothel that takes things in ways emotionally that you wouldn't expect. The one thing that I'd say is I think the stuff that you were calling out, Justin, was really interesting in terms of her developing empathy. Normally, I want a book to get to the concept really quickly in the first issue, but I think this laid out how she interacts with all these people. It did a nice job of laying out the cast, but the turn at the end was a little quick for me. I actually wanted them to slow play her development as a personality a little more over the course of the issues, because I think really delving into the psychology and taking a little farther versus where I think it's going in a second issue takes it to like slightly more typical places. Not that I need to stay in this brothel or anything, but it feels a little prisoner-esque in this first issue. And I think if we go in that direction, if we continue to explore this complex and what this means and blow out that concept a bit, this could be a very interesting sci-fi tale to watch.
I know you say you don't want to stay in that brothel, Alex, but I also know that you've booked a room at it.
Just to get one good night's sleep, you know?
Yeah, I think that's definitely
the idea that, you know, you got two kind of main ideas going on here, where it's like the life of a sex worker and how hard and complex it is. And then also this idea of what if AI starts to develop emotions and feelings and wants to be real. And it's kind of like this cross between. So there's a lot that this book can cover. We'll see where it goes and what happens. It's a weird kind of interesting take. The art is really impressive.
Yeah.
And I also think I wasn't as concerned about the turn at the end because I think it was set up pretty well over the course of the issue. And we get the reveal of the empathy sort of crystallizes it. And then we get a strong turn at the end. So it was fine by me.
All right. Yeah, definitely interested to pick up a second issue of this and see where things go. Next up, another advanced reviews, Our Bones Dust, number one. This is also on sale December 6th from Image Comics. And I believe drawn by Ben Stembeck, but it wasn't 100% clear from the credits for me. This takes place in a post-apocalyptic world where a bunch of scavenger humans live and there is an alien being who's exploring the world at the same time. I thought this was really interesting and two very different perspectives that we don't necessarily expect from this sort of story. What did you guys think about this one?
I really love the twist at the end. This is very interesting because you think you're starting in one story, but it keeps changing the more you kind of find out. So I think they did a really great job of kind of laying that out in such a cool, interesting way. The art and the character designs are so unique and different looking. It's really impressive artistically what they're doing in this book.
I also really like this. This reminds me of a comic from like 10 years ago called Prophet, the Rob Liefeld character that Brandon Graham took over. And really enjoyed that. It got into like perception, space, some big, deep sci-fi concepts. And this feels like it is doing sort of post-apocalyptic and alien stuff, high-level alien stuff at the same time. And a great combination. I thought the art was really cool. And one of my favorites of the week.
Wow. The Avengers, number 7 from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by C.F. Villa.
You cool it.
After the first arc where the Avengers fought off this attacking force of Black Order knockoffs who are trying to take over the world.
Wow. I guess the Ashen Combine doesn't resonate with you, Alex.
Sorry, man. Sorry. I know they're your favorite characters. I know you got that Ashen Combine tattoo, right?
That's right. Lips. And I have to leave room for my Murden and the Twilight Court tattoo coming out next.
I do appreciate it's good to throw new characters onto the pile. It's always good to expand the world. That's fine. Here we're getting a mystery involving the Avengers having lost a big battle, lost the entire world. But it's clear that something is a little wrong. We get at least 2 twists by the end of the issue. Pete, you're raising your hand. What'd you think?
Yes, I'm just, as the number one Jed McKay fan on this podcast, I just wanted to jump in here and just be like,
you weren't even around McKay from back in the day. You're just jumping on the McKay bandwagon.
That's right. I'm the first guy on the bandwagon here and really loving it.
No, I've been driving the bandwagon. The band on the wagon.
Well,
it was just a wagon
shotgun,
before.
Bro. I'm sitting shotgun and enjoying the ride. I just felt this was one of my favorites of the week. It was such an epic issue. Love how it starts. So much going on. Art is super tight bananas. Such a huge story. Love all the twists along the way. Very kind of cool. Just like the way it starts small and then really just kind of builds out an epic. So awesome. Don't want to spoil anything, but definitely worth checking out for sure.
Jed McKay picking up off of Jason Aaron's Avengers run, which, as we talked about for years, went so hard and like combined every possible iteration of Avengers characters, smash them together to make a big run. So that's a hard act to follow. But I think Jed McKay and C.F. Villa are doing such a great job of having it be super high stakes, big action, huge villains that they're introducing here, while still now getting at the I don't want to spoil the end of the issue, but getting into some of the other wider continuity Avengers villains in a great way. I agree. This is just such a fun, high-octane read. Definitely check it out.
Yeah. Supergirl Special, number 1 from DC Comics, written by Mariko Tamaki, art by Skylar Patridge. Last week, I believe, or maybe 2 weeks ago, we took a little bit of issue to what the Power Girl title is doing in terms of essentially turning Power Girl into Supergirl, down to a new job at Metropolis. She has a secret identity. Felt like that character was getting a little lost here. So I was very excited to get into this, which instead focused on Supergirl saying, hey, wait a second, Power Girl's exactly
Why
like
is
me
there
now.
Another,
what's going
yeah,
on?
What's up?
Really took our criticism.
Yeah, I know. Took it to heart and turned around a comic book very quickly, which is not easy to do. I really liked her. Mariko Tamaki as a writer, and I think she gives some good flavor to Supergirl here. Love Skylar Patridge's art, the way that she draws all the super family.
Come on.
So good. I didn't love this book. And the reason I'm sorry,
after
the
all
reason
that?
I know. And the reason I didn't love it is because I think we started with, and maybe I'm missing something.
Yeah,
we
trash this place, Justin. Let's burn it down. This is fucking bullshit.
We started with this idea of Supergirl being like, man, Power Girl is doing the same thing I'm doing. What am I now? And by the end of the issue, they're like, well, guess there's 2 of us. Other than learning a cool new way of eating cupcakes,
that's not new, bro. That's old. If you've been eating cupcakes right, that's how you eat cupcakes. First off, I love that.
Can I say something? If you're eating cupcakes that way, you're eating 2 cupcakes. Like, that is not eating cupcakes the right way.
That's how many you should be eating.
No, here's what you do.
What, one and done?
You cut the cupcake in half and take the bottom half of the cupcake, put it on the top here. Then you're eating one cupcake.
That's still just one cupcake. Boo.
There's too much icing on there. There's a proper amount of
icing
on one
cupcake.
That's
why you combined it.
No,
it's
cushing out everywhere. You're insane.
It's
the right metaphor for this because it's like, this is too many cupcakes and you solved nothing and now you feel sick.
No, no, no. Everybody eats 2 cupcakes at once. That's how it works. Anyways, I just think that what's great is they are realizing like, okay, they're similar, but instead of fighting that, they're leaning into it and learning more about each other and themselves, which I think is a beautiful thing to have happen. But I'm sorry if it all didn't happen in one issue. They're working on it, okay? It's something they realize is an issue, and they're going to be working on it. I think it was a beautiful thing that, yeah, they have all these problems. They're like, hey, why, you can't be like me. I'm me, you know, but they're,
I'm me.
It's, yeah, it's, so it's not all going to be solved in one issue, Zalbatron. Wait, okay? There's a better, bigger story coming. Wait for it.
I actually don't love cupcakes, just as a treat. Oh, you know what I mean? God. So, Jesus, like, Christ. I guess it works out, Pete,
I don't
because
love we delicious should, food.
I have a question,
Pete.
Do you
things.
Walk into a cupcake store and they say, how many cupcakes do you want, sir? You say, how many can you fit in here? And
no,
to be clear,
say,
for our audio podcast
give me
listeners,
an even
I'm pointing,
number
I'm pointing
I
to my mouth.
Two together.
When I said, how many can you fit in here? I was pointing to my mouth. I just want to be clear about that.
Okay. Oh, anybody worry, was that your mouth? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's
right.
I
saw you pointing to another place.
Worried about
the audio podcast.
Because if we go into it at a...
It's an audio podcast, so they can't see where I'm pointing, and it's in my mouth.
At a child's birthday party, rather than, Pete, you stealing a cupcake from the smallest unmasked boy you can get your hands on, I will give you mine from now on. In that way, we can coexist like Power Girl and Supergirl.
That's right.
That's what the stickers mean on the back of cars. They're about sharing your cupcakes. I get it now.
Coexist, yeah.
What did you think about this book, Justin?
I enjoyed the art. I like that they
sort
of called out.
Beautiful.
Very good. Very good art. I like that they called out something that I think they, I guess, anticipated was going to be a take coming out of the redesign of these characters. And Supergirl, I think, just has a lot going on internally. I like that that's what this was about. Looking forward to more from her.
Tear us apart.
How does she...
That's not just the description of the cupcake discussion we were just having. It's also the title of this next book, Tear Us Apart Number 3, from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jay Baruchel and Van Jensen, art by Alessandro Michelli. We are following two people who have escaped from an assassin death cult, I guess is the best way of describing them, who has superpowers that can literally tear people apart. They're trying to live their lives, going to the mall for the first time. And in this issue... we finally get one of my favorite tropes, a crankety old man who's teaming up with him. Pete, you had to have loved that too.
Oh, yeah. Come on. It's nothing better than to be seen. I just think that the art style of this is absolutely fantastic. You know, such a kind of unique, kind of cool look to it. You know, love the start. I feel like, you know, if two murderers can't find love in this crazy world, who can? So, yeah, I think this is a fantastic book. It's got a great team on it. It's definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, I really like this book as well. Their time at the mall, it feels they do a good job of showing just how unexposed to the world these characters are. And they're innocent in a way, but also deadly in a very other, very clear way here. So this added twist, like you said, Alex, is a fun counterpoint to their innocent ways. We have a jaded, crankety Pete-like character.
Next up, another advanced review, Lifehouse, on sale December 20th from Image Comics. I mean, this one we can spoil. Based on Lifehouse by Pete Townsend, which came out, I don't know, a while ago, or people have known about it for a while. Story by James Harvey and David Hine. Script by David Hine. Art by James Harvey and Max Prentice. This is based on an original screenplay by Pete Townsend that they're putting in comic book form. And it is exactly what you would expect from a Pete Townsend screenplay, down to wild sci-fi things in the classic 70s, 80s, very early 80s style from Europe. I don't know. Get high and read this, I guess.
Yeah, this is really tripped out and kind of amazing. Artistically, it's really impressive. It's a very unique, kind of cool look to it. Letting the tripped out vibe flow through it. So, yeah, just super impressed with artistically what this is achieving. And I love this idea. You know what I mean? Try to, you know, mix mediums. Like, you know, I think it's an interesting idea of being inspired by a song or a musician or whatever. And what does that kind of, what can you do with that in a comic? So I think that's very cool.
Badass move to write your band, The Who, into this comic as the best band of all time, basically. So pretty sick move on Pete Townsend's part, into his movie, I guess it was. But really good art. It is that sort of, I feel like there are books like this out on the stands in other ways where it's like, music's the thing, man, and it's finding a sci-fi way into making music the central idea, and how that symbolizes freedom and is the way for this oppressed society to get out. But a lot of it, if you're a fan of The Who, there's a ton of references to their music, and their whole vibe feels very sci-fi rock opera.
Yeah, I think they did a really good job with this, just in terms of translating what it is. Obviously, I haven't read the original screenplay, but there's bits of it in the back. There's notes like Pete Townsend talking about one of the main characters being like, she's 20, but a sexy 20. And I was like, all right, this is clearly a screenplay from decades ago at this point. So they've definitely updated it and
tweaked
it.
What does that even mean? She's 20, mean, but a sexy 20. What does that even mean?
I don't know. I wasn't in the what Who, the fuck? Pete. What but the fuck? This is like Mobius meets V for Vendetta. By Mobius, I mean like the comic book creator. So I don't know. Mm. It was a little hard to hold on
not
to.
Not the character from Loki?
Ah, I thought it was a is Loki ref. Meant?
Yeah, no, I meant that actually.
You're talking about one of the Wilson brothers?
Wow. Yeah, wow. Okay. Anyway, why don't we move on?
Involuntary Owen Wilson.
Like you said, if your dad don't want to do this. Wow.
Help
X-Men
me.
Number 28.
Help me.
Wow. Help. Oh, wow. God. Wow. X-Men number 28 stop. For Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Joshua.
The Dukes!
Big stuff going down in this issue as Firestar is her cover with Orcus is really starting to crumble here as she frees the Juggernaut from their hiding and whispers basically to everybody she can. She's like, hey, I'm a spy. Jean Grey made me a spy. Don't worry about it. Just don't kill me, okay? So lots of big stuff going down with her. And meanwhile, Kitty Pryde and Miss Marvel are sent to a task force to another dangerous place. So, Justin, I know you and I have been talking quite a bit about how it feels like there's not quite of a center here. It feels like the danger amped up incredibly in this issue.
Well, and there's not a real through line except for like, hey, everything's stressful for these. All these characters in this book are stressed out. We get Sunfire at the top dealing with like this horrible situation he's in. Firestar is like, it sucks for her. And then at the end, you get Shadowcat, who's in a bad mood a lot. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. Meeting up with Wolverine, and Wolverine's like, hey, a couple questions about your costume. Those swords are evil. Are you okay? And she's like, shut up, old man. We have to go get almost killed in 1 second by these bad guys. And this is just very stressful all around. But I do think while there still isn't that central spine to this story, I like this X-Men comic as a way of just sort of parachuting in on these interesting characters in interesting situations. And I've been enjoying the event. I am interested. We're approaching halfway through, really. Mm-hmm. It ends sometime in January when we are going to get that sort of like funnel into the final story.
Neat. I just wanted to say that like I read this and I was like, I don't know what's going on, but I like the part where Wolverine showed up and there was a cool last page reveal, which I was happy about that. And man, I really love the art style. I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, this is a little bit still like the news, just sort of getting you up to speed. Yeah. There's a lot of Dr. Stasis dialogue that's like, oh, this is happening in another book, just so you know, this is eventually all going to tie together. And I was like, okay, I've been reading the other book, so I get it, so that's cool. But I agree with you on the Wolverine thing, and I actually really like the fact that he's been so outside of this entire time, him coming in and be like, what are you guys doing right now?
Well, and honestly, they
I
see
felt
him
very
and
he's, seen in that moment.
Yeah, exactly. He's in like a clean uniform, just like there. I was like, what is this? How is he there? And not in like some like fucked up outfit or something. He's just very like they plucked him out of like mid-90s X-Men and were like, hey, you're here now. He's like, huh? He's like, I thought we were on the, I was on the X-Men blue team with Cyclops and my guys.
Yeah, my Swiss cheese braid. Do I still say that? Is no, wait, that's just Sam Beckett.
Oh, boy, that's Scott Bakula. That's Scott Bakula.
Same character, basically. Same character.
What?
Speaking of taking it back in the day, the return of Superman 30th Anniversary Special number 1 from DC Comics, written by Dan Jurgens, Louise Simonson, Jerry Ordway, Carl Kessel, art by Travis Moore, John Bogdanov, oh my God, Jerry Ordway, Tom Grummett, and Brett Breeding. This is the original teams from the Death and Return of Superman event, revisiting that for news stories as Cyborg Superman once again attacks Metropolis. everybody reminisces about things that happened back in the day around the other return of the Superman, characters and revisit that there. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, this was like a little going back in time. It had really like an 80s, 90s feel to all the art and stuff. So
that tracks.
You know, Superboy shredding on the skateboard, you know. I was like, man, I miss the 90s.
I would say it sort of tracks us back to about 1993.
You know, approximately. Yeah. What did you think, Justin? I have to imagine you were a Return of Superman fan back in the day.
Yeah, and like this, like Pete's saying, it does take you right back there, and it had me thinking like, wow, what a wild idea that was. Something that I think comics do a lot more now and since then, but back then the idea that four Supermen were back, and the sort of unwritten thing was like, one of them is the real one, or they're competing to see who will be Superman. And then we get the great reveal that it's actually none of them. They're all variously spoiled, different in wild ways. Two of them technically villains, two of them great heroes that have continued on, and that our Superman was this other guy completely, who then has to fight half of them to try to save the day one more time. Just a great story, and to get back into it with the, I think the key thing here is with the original art teams, mm-hmm. was just a great way to take you back to that, this great event.
Yeah, I did think the framing was a little weird, that Cyborg Superman is attacking the city, and Lois Lane's like, this is a huge story, we got to get on this, but first I need to sit down with Perry White's journals and reminisce about everything that happened back in the day. I was like, yo.
Well, especially to be like, let's have the most interesting character take us through this journey, through this exciting time. It's Perry White, who was old then, and he's sort of being old now.
Yeah. So there was that. Of the stories, I thought the Superboy story was best. That's the one that was the most fun and got most towards the character for me. The other ones, take a give. But if you were a fan back in the day, at least I appreciate this as a tribute and trying to do something new. The All-Nighter.
Well, it also touched on, sorry, just one last thing. It touched on, like, back then, like, Intergang was the, like, alien weapons dealer, and everyone has, like, crazy arm cannons. Mm-hmm. Just randomly, I was like, that's something that hasn't been touched on again. And that was, I thought, very funny in the John Henry Irons story.
Yeah. The All-Nighter, number 11 from Comixology, written by Chip Zdarsky, art by Jason Liu. This is kicking off the final arc of this series about a superhero kid vampire and the world that she lives in. I got to admit, I'm not particularly familiar with this title. I think we might have read the first issue, whenever that came out years ago. But I really dug this. I thought Jason Liu's art style was really good. The characters were interesting to look at. And even with not knowing the situations, I was instantly drawn in by this kid vampire superhero. And there seems to be a lot of danger and intrigue going on there. There's also a wild twist in the last page that made me think, A, I want to go back and read all of this, and B, this is probably Chip Zdarsky's Preacher, is what I'm going to say.
Oh, wow.
It's probably the closest comparison. That.
Wow.
And that's all there is to say about it.
That's a crazy thing to throw on that. At the end there, you're just like, threw a grenade as you left. I just think that this, I agree that really unbelievable story. Love the pace of it. Very kind of quick, which so much went down, which I thought was awesome. Art was really impressive. I can't believe this is the end. I'm really bummed because I thought it was so cool.
This book reminds me of the Buffy comics and even the Buffy TV show and that universe in a way that comes at it that isn't an homage or ripping it off in any way, but coming at it of vampire stories and the larger the mythology around them in a completely different way, but landing in a similar place with like good dialogue, good characters, good action, and a fun reveal at the end.
Yep. Totally agree. Let's move over to Scarlet Witch, number 10 from Marvel, written by Steve Orlando, art by Sarah Pacelli. This is the final issue of the series.
Ooh.
Scarlet Witch fights the Witchfinder. Don't worry, it's coming back for a special, and then some other iteration later next year.
News.
We don't know exactly what it is, but this is a knockdown, drag-out fight. This reminded me a lot of, do you guys remember the Merlin Madame Mim fight from, I think it was Sword in the Stone, right? The Disney cartoon with like they're just changing it to different animals to take out each other.
Yeah.
That's what this issue reminded me of, a more hardcore version of that.
Well, I was going to say, like, I thought just a great use of magic in this. Mm-hmm. In a, you know, you'd cover a lot of books that have magic, even the Doctor Strange book, which does it in a different way. But this felt very much like two people casting legit spells, both artistically presented and in the way they talked about it and the way the story unfolded. So that was cool. Great sort of secondary reveals about Joseph and his point in this story. Sad, really sad, genuinely sad to see that this is the last issue, even though I know more is coming. Because I've been loving this series. This feels like the best Scarlet Witch has been in years. And like we talked about Hawkeye, the Hawkeyeification of different comics, this is like just a great way of taking that character and giving her a unique niche in the Marvel Universe to play in.
Yeah, Orlando is killing this. I'm sad to see this end because this was such a great use of characters. So creative, really fun, really felt like it stretched the characters in such cool ways. Art was so impressive. Love all the action, adventure, and kind of magic fights that we got in this. And plus Darcy. I mean, come on. That pillow move was fantastic. And yeah, it was great to see her.
We know you're going to love that.
But this has been such a great package. Like the art and the storytelling meeting in such a creative place. And every kind of like, it was like a one and done with a lot of different issues. And was just so cool and so well done, so creative. Yeah, just super sad to see it end, and I want more.
The Midnight Show, number two from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Brian Hurt. In the first issue, we were introduced to this old, never-finished movie called God of Monsters that was a mashup movie of all of the different classic monsters. Over the course of finally showing a print of the movie, all of those monsters started to come to life and attack people very violently in a small town. Here, we're getting a lot of those characters realizing what's going on and getting eliminated very quickly in shocking ways.
Yeah.
This is bloody and gruesome and surprising, and I am loving this book so far.
Yes.
I thought this second issue really, it's like a two-parter, and I thought this finished the premise and really set us up for going forward in a great way and explored all the actual monsters and, like you said, made them actually scary. These classic Universal monsters are sort of not – they're old-timey and they're not presented often in very scary ways. And this book, I thought – more successful than even a lot of the movies that are trying to make these characters happen.
Agreed.
Did a great job of making them, setting them up and making them legit scary. So I thought this was great.
Yeah, I really agree. This second issue really took it to another level. The kind of like, even like the mummies, which is kind of like a joke, I really loved what they did with that. The design of the monsters was so cool. And yeah, fun last panel, cool reveal to get you excited for more. Yeah, I just think that this really found another gear and really impressed with where they took this in the second issue.
And I just want to give a shout out to the same sort of thing that I said with the first issue. I don't know if this is in the script or through Brian Hurt's art or both, but the way the layouts, movie style, cut between scenes where you have somebody talking about something and you see what's happening in other places between those panels, I just think is such a neat, fun way, a cinematic way of laying out the book, which is something you don't really see in comics. So I was very impressed. Last and definitely not least, Where the Body Was. This is not coming out until December 13th from Image Comics, written by Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips, the team from Criminal, and a million other lauded things. Back together on a new graphic novel. I really don't want to spoil anything about this because the way that this unfolds was so phenomenal. I will mention up top, we're going to have Ed Brubaker on our live show on December 5th. I know, to talk about this very book, and I cannot wait to talk about it with this with him.
Justin,
the one thing that I will say is per the title,
I'm cool.
It takes place on the street. There is a body found on the street. I won't tell you who the body is, but it leads up to that and spins out from there. This is unlike any of the other mystery books this team has done, as Brubaker cops to at the end. It has a little bit more of the format and rhythm of a romance book, if anything, which you can definitely feel while you're reading it. And it is as close to comic book perfection as you can get.
It's a surprising story, like you're saying. And in the back matter, I like reading what Ed was talking about in the creation of the book. But, you know, we know this team all the way down to Jacob Phillips and who does the colors, and artists that I have become a huge fan of over the course of like That Texas Blood and the other books that he's doing. So it's really high level comic book creation, and taking some, like Alex was saying, taking some creative different approaches to a story like this, really like being with the people and seeing people take their flaws and let them guide them in a lot of maybe not great places, but the places that they sort of feel like they want to go because of their different impulses and urges. And it was just such a pleasure to read this, especially coming out in December. Definitely something to give to anybody in your life that likes a good story. This is a great comic.
Yeah.
Well, also there.
Oh, go ahead, Pete.
There's a lot of fucking in this, so maybe not give it to a kid, but, you know, like...
Dad.
Well, I'm just saying, there's, you know...
Yeah, there is. You're right.
This is in this one. They be fucking.
Yes, this is definitely 100% a very, very adult book, an adult mystery. It's dealing with some complicated emotions, but there's a lot of different characters that we haven't seen in books from Brubaker and Phillips before.
The kid stuff was really adorable and cool. It was such a cool perspective to have in this kind of.
Well, that's the thing
story.
Is Ed Brubaker, from a writing perspective, is a master of perspectives and giving you very, very different feeling characters that feel completely human and lived in, but fresh in a way that you haven't seen before. Sean Phillips knows how to draw absolutely everybody. You know, this is a silly thing that I keep bringing up, but reading a lot of the superhero comics, I was like, these people all look the same, except they're dressed differently. Sean Phillips draws different body types and real people and feels like people that actually live on a street. There's a documentary conceit to a little bit of this book that I think really works in its favor and makes it feel different as well. And the way it's paced out over the course of the 100-plus pages is so impressive because I don't know about you guys, but while I was reading it, I would have these questions pop up in my head and be like, hey, what about that thing? And then in the book, it literally be like, but what about that thing? And I'd be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you're right, like, whoa.
Stop reading my mind, Brubaker. Anyway, like we're saying, fantastic book. I know we're jumping around and not mentioning anything about the plot, but really one of the joys of it is how it unfolds.
You don't want to spoil it.
As you don't expect. Perfectly paced, perfect comic book. Definitely look for that. And that's it for the stack. If you like, support this show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Great ep. Got me right in the meat places. Just